Welcome to Spotlight on Heritage with John Costa and Rob Watson. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Here we go. I'm looking forward to this. I enjoy the Spotlight on art, and I thought the one with Anton the other week was particularly good. But obviously Heritage is a subject that's close to my heart, so trying to find the right people to come on Spotlight for Heritage is going to be really key, I think.
So that leads you into introducing our guest today.
Absolutely. Did you like that? Brilliant. That's why you and I are the Morecambe and Wise of podcasting. And we're joined this week by a good friend of mine. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
She's nodding. That's good. A good friend of mine, Sue Lester from the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, John. Very appreciative of the invite. Thank you.
No, not at all. It's good to see you. Now, you're fresh off of a trip down to London. Did you drive or go on the train?
I went on the train, and it was held actually at a very interesting venue, the Wesley's house, John Wesley's.
Oh, okay.
Impressive, yeah. Residence. So it was nice to see an interesting historic venue alongside the family history chat, basically.
Okay, so how many people did you get? Was that on Saturday?
It was on Saturday, all-day conference. There were about 50, 60 people there from all around Britain, actually, talking about their own societies and initiatives for the future, what they were doing already, pointers, etc. You're always good to share information with other people doing the same kind of thing, and you kind of feel, oh, perhaps we're doing okay. You know, you sometimes aren't sure just what the wider picture is, but
start benchmarking yourself against
exactly
other societies and people. And I guess all the challenges for these guys will be the same, you know, like engaging a younger audience. We can talk about that in a minute. And I don't mean young people necessarily. I'm talking about, you know, well, our collective age in this room. I should imagine someone who's in their early 40s would be younger to us, wouldn't they? So we're all the other side of 50, the three of us. So there we go. I'm not going to ask anyone their age. So that's an important one. And of course, then it's things like the impact of the internet, because people can find the information. It doesn't necessarily mean they're finding the right information. But when you're at an event like that with the societies, is the local one that you're involved in, is it on course? Is it doing better than others? Is it embracing technology in a way that others are?
I'd like to think Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society's got a lot going for itself, because we've got quite a few different aspects to the society. For instance, we've got a research centre, as you know, because you visited yourself. We hold Zoom meetings, which have become very popular, a good way to engage the wider population beyond the county. You know, we've got a journal which goes out to people. Some people really enjoy reading that. We've got local groups. And I, being the publicity officer, am very keen to get the word out there to all sorts of other groups. You know, I share a lot of information from a local history group who might be having a talk, for instance, and you might think, oh, I might pop along to that. So I'd like to think we were a bit broader than just our own society. And there is a lot going on in Leicestershire, let's face it, in terms of heritage. So we're really trying to tap into that.
I thought it was interesting as well, you mentioned in the lift on the way up here for this podcast that we were talking about people, and you said, you know, someone said, do we have to use, they said Twitter, X obviously, or Facebook for what we do. And it's like, it's interesting in that 2025 people are having a conversation about, well, do I need to use social media? And it's not, you don't need to use it, it's what are you using it for?
Yeah.
And you guys are quite prolific. I mean, you're the person that does all of the posting as well, aren't you? I mean, could you do what you do in your role without engaging in social media in some way?
Well, I don't think we could. An example would be, recently we held a course, as you know, because you came along to it, First Steps in Family History. And the only place I advertised was via Facebook and also our website. Now, we got enough people for the course through that. It hadn't gone out in our journal. I hadn't been on Radio Leicester. I hadn't been on, you know, written to the Mercury about it. But, you know, we ran the course, and I regularly advertise our courses on Facebook, because if you're not aware of the society and people keep going, oh, I didn't know you existed, etc. Facebook has got, our group's got 2,000 followers, and a lot of them aren't members. So the idea being that they might see an event that's of interest to them and say, oh, yes, can I come along? Do I need to book? They come along, they receive a nice welcome. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Two came back the next Saturday or next week and joined. So from that point of view, it engaged with our Facebook followers, if you like. Twitter, well, there's an opportunity there to share nationwide, For instance, I went to the event on Saturday. I posted a picture of the Wesley's house, said I'd enjoyed it. It was, you know, reposted by several other people. And that wasn't about Leicestershire, that was more England-wide or whatever. So it's about getting the word out there, I think, not just locally.
And the other thing for me that I think is particularly interesting about your society is, obviously last year it was your 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
One of the oldest, if not the oldest, societies in the UK, is that right?
Well, in actual fact, a lot of societies...
You registered in January and we registered in March, so who's the oldest?
There was a real energy in the mid-1970s about family history research. So 1974, 75, 76, a lot of societies were formed. So a lot of societies are just celebrating their 50th. Now, I made a point of looking what others were doing. I went to another event and I thought, no, this isn't what I want to do for us. I didn't feel welcomed, really, in all honesty. I didn't feel part of it. So with help from yourself and our planning group, when we had our 50th, I wanted everybody to feel very involved, you know, going from meet and greet to the maps we had, where are you from, where are your ancestors from, that people came and they thought it was a great day. There was a cafe, you know, people like going to sit down after they've been around looking at exhibitors. They don't just want to sit down in front of a screen and talk about why they can't find their great aunt Alice in, you know, Thornton in 1858 or something.
That sounded like a question you'd actually been asked. That was quite funny.
We did have a whatever happened to great aunt Alice, but I don't think she came from Thornton. I was just trying to quickly think of a village.
Yeah, bring all those things together. I guess also there's this expectation with the role that you have that you have all the knowledge, you have all the information and stuff. And that recent talk that you gave about getting started in your family, your family's research, was very good because you used quite a lot of personal examples and stuff. And the one that really stuck in my head and I've written down here is about your, I think it was great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather, about being a fireman at the Natural History Museum. And as you go into it, you find more and more, you know, how addictive it is, you know, someone you get really kind of drawn into it. So, yeah. Do you enjoy giving those talks? Because surely it must be the enthusiasm from the people there that really brings you in.
Oh, I do. I mean, I've created a few talks now, but getting started, obviously a key to that hook to get in the first place. And I thought, well, I could just make it fairly bland. You know, you go to this website, you do this, you do that. But I feel to actually have a person involved, in that case, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and to use those as examples of how you could research, makes it a bit more interesting. You know, I had photographs of where he lived, etc. But it's those little finds that you don't know about when you get started. I mean, it's only, well, 2-3 generations back, I didn't know he was a fireman at the Natural History Museum. And I couldn't believe it when I found that out. You know, he said he was he was a fireman, but wow, not just anywhere, but at somewhere I can go and visit. And I find it quite emotional, actually, if I go along to the Natural History Museum in through those great, impressive doorways and think, well, he walked in here, and he walked in here for years, you know, because he worked there. I've got a photo of him in uniform as a fireman. So it's those little snippets, and lots of people come in and find that little snippet. You know yourself, when your mother came in, I found the most amazing connection that she and you didn't know about in terms of the TV programme, A House Through Time. And who would have thought it, you know? So that makes it fun. It's not just about dates, in my opinion.
I think also one of the other things that stands out from that talk that you gave, for me, was the fact that you said to people, you never find out the information from the normal route that you think you would, as in the person themselves. It's always through like their sister or like, you know, a great aunt or something. Oh yeah, that's, you know, he worked there, he did that, or she was like that, or, well, yeah, don't go down that route, you'll find something you probably won't want to know. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, a lot of people go, oh, my parents aren't alive, or there's nobody alive who'll know. Well, I've been researching myself quite a long time, and actually my mother said to me, oh, go and ask your father's cousin. She knows quite a bit. And on another branch, again, I wrote to a cousin of my mother's and she sent me little notes on, oh, this was so-and-so, this was somebody else. So there are bits of information out there, as well as false information, you know. Oh, yes, I had somebody telling me that my great-grandmother was a housekeeper for Charles Dickens. Well, a bit further down the line, it was No, she might have lived near where Charles Dickens lived, but she wasn't his housekeeper, unfortunately.
I love stories like that kind of. You know, we've got a grandma in our family who put her husband in the workhouse when he couldn't work anymore. So I'm not talking from any moral high mound. So this is Spotlight on Heritage with John Costa and Rob Watson, and we're with Sue Lester this week from the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society. Now, Sue, you mentioned House Through Time earlier, which some people listening may have heard or seen on the television. Fantastic programme. What kind of impact does something like that, when it comes on, you know, the BBC or ITV or any of these other channels, when something big comes along like that? I mean, quite groundbreaking, and does what you do day in, day out, week in, week out at the research centre suddenly kind of gives it a different take and a different view and makes it really kind of interesting and impactful about where you live rather than, you know, your town. It's more like the building you live in. Does that have like an uptick with things like the research centre? Do you suddenly get more inquiries and that kind of thing?
I think there are two programmes particularly that have that impact. One is Who Do You Think You Are?, where obviously celebrities are going along and getting their family histories served up on a plate, if you like.
Because someone else has done that, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah. You know, you go into a venue and you suddenly, oh, you know, here's your history. And then, of course, it doesn't
laying
work
about
like
on
that.
The table for
yes.
you.
So there's often an upsurge when that programme is on, and that's great. A House Through Time is obviously a slightly different perspective, but we find quite a lot of people are interested in researching the history of their house or a house where an ancestor lived. And I've actually run a course on Trace Your House History, which can be quite straightforward if you live in the city. It's more difficult in the countryside because a lot of censuses didn't actually have house numbers. So it's a bit more investigative, if you like. But you know, you get some great stories. We had somebody, I think it was from Westcote's area, and I'd seen that the person who lived in his house played cricket for Leicestershire Cricket Club, and he'd put that on the census. So we found a picture of this guy. You know, it was really, really interesting that there was a connection with his house just found by searching. It's not his family member, but, you know, if you're interested in history, heritage, that kind of thing broadens it out. And also in Leicester, you know, with the very diverse population that we've got, people aren't necessarily wanting to research their own family history. It was more difficult to do so. But to research a history of a house, I know Leicester University, for instance, Colin Hyde is doing something about Leicester's terraced houses, which we're really keen to be involved in because there's a great history in a lot of these houses. You know, lots of secrets and lies, if you like.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just the amount of people that have been in there and the lives that they've lived. And, you know, and I think that's what makes these programmes so fascinating when you watch them, that, you know, there'll be certain things, I mean, on the outskirts of a particular city, and quite clearly these people were well-to-do and it was quite a middle-class area, and then it became a student accommodation, and now there's a family that's been living in there. But it also got sign of the times, isn't it? You know, sort of, you know, who was in that area. I mean, I'm from the East End of London, so, you know, Brick Lane and all around where we lived and stuff, you know, it was Huguenots and then Bangladeshis, Vietnamese boat people. You know, it got known as a transient area. So I guess it does make it a little bit more interesting when you to find out about where your house is at that particular time as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I did a project recently. It was a house in London, actually, but I traced it back to 1840. And there were so many exciting stories. I, for instance, found a photograph of somebody who'd lived in the house. There'd been a robbery involved in the house. There was a local Baptist minister who'd lived there, all sorts of people. And to find a photograph of somebody who lived in your house in past times is, you know, quite amazing, really. And you can really do it with any house prior to 1939, but you can do trade directories, street directories more recently if you want to. It's more difficult and you won't find so much information that's of interest, but just the jobs they did. I don't know whether you've looked much at the 1921 census, but in the 1921 census, you don't only get your own family, you know, their ages, etc., but where they worked. And you can also find who else worked at that place. So if it's like a boot and shoe factory, you can track everybody who worked alongside your family members. How interesting is that? And you can think, okay, I like looking, well, where's that house? Where's the factory? Okay, they could have walked there. And it's further afield. Oh, how would they have got there? So it's taking a whole different aspect to research. And it's like community history, if you like, not just family history. And personally, I think that's as interesting almost. And certainly I think something to build on when we're looking for new avenues to expand our membership.
So you were talking about things like, you know, the census there, the 1921 census, and obviously we've gone from having to go to a national archive or your local archive at your library or the county archive to being able to look online and the use of the internet. Now, what was interesting during your talk as well a couple of weeks ago, you were saying about, you know, they're only as accurate as the person that's put the information in as well, which I thought was, which is quite interesting. And my mum's maiden name is Favash. And so the guy came back from one of the Saturday Heritage Fairs last year and said, well, these are all the names for Favash, but here's Five Ash as well, in case it was a different name. So just because it's online, it doesn't make it easier. How many people do you think come to the research centre and go, I've got this far, can you help, before they've actually asked for help?
Well, quite a few, I think, have dabbled and then they've said, but I've got stuck. There's two people with the same name. It's an unusual name, but they come from the same village. So how am I going to work out which one is my ancestor? Because I can't do it. And we think, well, okay, there are ways we can look at that. Maybe they've got a sibling with a more unusual name. I mean, I've got somebody with quite a common name, John Smith or something similar to that. And he had a brother called Arthur. Now, Arthur is, you know, not as common as John. So that was a direction into that. But a girl came in not long ago. She'd done her tree, in inverted commas. I don't think you ever do your tree to completion. But she got stuck. She was in her 30s. She was very enthusiastic. She was great at looking at all the various things online. But she just wasn't certain how to take a sideways step and find out a little bit more. And she said, oh, it's been really useful. We managed to find a photograph of her ancestor because she didn't know of a particular website. One to do with the Leicestershire Regiment, in actual fact. And she came back again because there were clearly bits that she wasn't aware of, that because we've got a lot of local knowledge and expertise, we could point her in that extra direction. Somebody I noticed the other day wrote an article in a newspaper saying you can upload a tree and do a tree in a weekend. Well, I've been researching for quite a long time and I'm always finding new things. It could be a school record. You know, I'm interested in where my great aunt went to school. And if you can find that kind of information, it's a broader picture. Mm. It's not just basic facts. And can you get back to 1066, which some people want to do. It's not everybody's approach, but some people want to find links to royalty and famous people and things like that.
Yeah, if that's your thing, I guess that kind of what motivates you. So just quickly in this segment, I want to talk to you about what kind of impact has the ease of being able to have your DNA done there on people coming to you? And of course, then it's the impact of what you actually find your DNA says about your ancestry as well, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if you were aware that Tori King did a talk for us on our 50th anniversary as part of our celebrations, where she talked about DNA. Obviously, she's got a lot of expertise with the Richard III discoveries and everything to do with that, Leicester University. If you're having a DNA test, you've got to be very aware of why you're doing it, because there are a lot of things you might find out that are shocking, surprising, etc. A lot of people have been given DNA tests for Christmas, and they've done the test and they find out, well, I'm, you know, 70% UK and 10% Swedish and some other percentage. Now, what are they doing with that information? If you're trying to find about your heritage because somebody thinks, oh, you look a bit Italian, have you got any Italian blood? That might be of interest. But if you want to use it in terms of family history, you're going to have to really have a family tree on Ancestry or another site so that you can actually look at links. It depends why you want to do it. If you want to find long lost ancestors, fine. If you want to find somebody else researching your name, fine. If you want to find out who your grandfather was because you don't know, you might be successful, but it's quite a complex thing to research. And, you know, it can be a bit frightening, I think, that people are finding he's not actually my father. Yeah. You've got to be aware of that.
I guess it's, again, just being aware, as you said before, about, you know, do your tree in a weekend. It's these things are all marketing tools to hook you into to doing these things. And then it's what are you doing with the information and how is that impacting you, and then how are you going to use it, I guess, as well. Yeah. Now, Sue, talking about the research centre that people can come and use, can you use that as a non-member of the society?
You can, yeah, okay. Indeed. We're open 3 days a week. We're actually based in Every Street in Town Hall Square, right opposite the fountain. We're open in the week 3 days a week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 10:30 till 3. And then we're open on Saturdays 10 till 12:30. And people can pop in for a day, half a day. We do ask for a small fee, donation, £3 if you're not a member. But you're very welcome to come in and browse. We've got volunteers who will give you individual help. If you're not confident about using a computer, we can help you with that. So don't feel you've got to have that sort of expertise. If you've never done anything, we can help. If you're, you know, 2 years down the line, we can help. You can just browse. You don't have to have any assistance. See what we've got. We've got lots of books on Leicestershire villages and on Leicester itself, which some people will just come in and look at those rather than actually using Ancestry, Find My Past. We've also got the British Newspaper Archive. Now, newspapers are brilliant for finding out more about family members. And you might think, well, do they have to be famous to find something in a newspaper? Well, I Googled my grandfather's name and I found he had given a talk about the labour movement in Wolverhampton. I had no idea about that. I found it quite surprising. He was also secretary of the Allotment Society, so I found that. But you'll find criminal things, you'll find somebody who's been a witness at a crime, you'll find all sorts of things. So that can often produce information that you're not necessarily going to find on the standard Ancestry and Find My Past websites. There's a bit of an overlap with newspapers, but it's a great resource.
I guess it's also about not just finding the answer, it's finding out a small piece of the jigsaw that maybe just clarifies a sideways piece of information you've got about someone else with a name, isn't it? It's almost quite, it's quite detective, really, isn't it?
I mean, that's what talk, I like about
it. Yeah, I felt you was a bit Sherlock when you were standing there doing your talk with your mind palace and sort of trying to get all these things to match together and not thinking in a linear way, but thinking more in a kind of, where was it at that time? What are they wearing? And I've done that quite a lot with my own research around families and sort of military connections. I had one particular photograph of, I wasn't sure what the uniform was or when the date was because we couldn't tell. And I sent it to someone that I know, Nick LeBand, who does the Trench Project. And he said to me, well, that looks like the Labour Corps badge. And then we went and discovered that actually, yes, he did leave the Royal Artillery and then he went into the Labour Corps. So it's knowing those connections and having those conversations at the research centre with people, isn't it?
I think that's one of the things I personally really like about it. You do feel you're like a detective. And there's a lot of lateral thinking involved. So if you can't find X, well, think about Y and Z. I mean, we've done sessions on brick walls in family history. That's the kind of term that people use if you've got stuck. And it's fascinating. Sometimes you can solve them. Sometimes it's like, I'm looking for a baptism in 1570 and I can't find it. Well, no, you might not find it. But this whatever happened to Aunt Alice, we did solve because basically she'd left Leicester, she'd married, she'd moved away, but she'd probably put still that her place of birth was somewhere in Leicestershire. So once you look for Alice in, I don't know, Evington, you might be able to find her. So for me, that's something I really enjoy. But some people want to trawl through, as I said, this 1066 elusive search thing.
I think it's fascinating. Rob, have you done any family history research at all?
I never have. I think my mum did a few years ago. And we've got some German heritage on my dad's side and French Canadian on my mum's side. Wow. So it goes back to about the 18th century.
I've got some French, Italian, and some Jewish on my side as well. And my name Costa means apple in French, like Costar, C-O-S-T-A-R. Mine's E-R. So it's Costamonger, so like a barra person. And my granddad was a person with a barra in the East End of London. So again, it's thinking about your names and where your names come from as well, isn't it? Fascinating. So you've been listening to John Costa and Rob Watson on the Spotlight on Heritage recording. with a good friend of ours, like I said, Sue Lester from the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society. Thank you for taking the time to come and talk to us. Absolutely fascinating to hear about this. Now, one of the things that always strikes me is the term immortality. Doesn't mean living forever. It means someone's talking about you and keeping your name alive. How many people do you think start this project because of someone passing away? And there's almost like a need to do it. I know my mum, for example, she's now the matriarch of the family. So if she doesn't know who these people are on these photographs, we are never going to know because there is no one older. Do you find a lot of people come in because, like, you know, time's running out?
I think so. I mean, I started a long time ago, but my father had recently died. And I think, although he would have been fascinated with what I found out, things were starting to become a lot easier to research. And that prompted me to get started. But yeah, I think you're right. But as I said when you came to the course on Saturday, there are people who've just got something like a photograph or a medal, and they're saying, oh, who would this medal have been awarded to? It's not a family name I know, because it could be a grandparent, you know, on the mother's side. And it can be a starting point. Somebody else has came in and said, I'm interested in finding a burial for a family member. I don't know where they were buried. Well, we found the burial of a young child. And suddenly, like, oh, well, could I find a bit more about them? You know, who were their parents? Who were the next generation about? Before you know it, you've got them hooked. And they've gone back several generations. And then, as I mentioned to you, I like the sideways step. You know, I had a great uncle who was an inventor, apparently, on the census. Well, what did he invent? Mm-hmm. So you start looking at that and you find out all sorts of things about patents and things that are not directly linked to your family. So I think often people will totally get engaged and enthusiastic, and that's great. That's what we really like to see.
And I think if people listening to this are interested, obviously they can find the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society on Facebook. That's a good place to start. Come and visit your research centre, have a conversation, whether you join or not. Obviously, if you join, you get the fantastic journal, which is an amazing thing. And it's gone out to all the libraries in the city and the county now as well, isn't it?
It has, yes. Yeah, we're really pleased with that. It was part of our 50th anniversary thing. We sent it out to all the libraries.
So again, people thinking, well, where do I start? Pop into your local library and ask for the copy of the journal from the Family History Society. But one of the things I thought as well that you said, the three things I've mentioned too, the third and final thing for me is, if you're going to start, it's not easy. It's straightforward because there's certain things that you can do and steps. But also just pick one thing to go after at a time rather than trying to do, you know, as you said, all four grandparents. Just pick one and see how far you can get and do it. So it's almost like a slow race rather than a sprint, isn't it, family history?
I think so. I mean, we've come, you know, met people who've tried to go at it in all directions. And they're like, I can't keep track of that. And I think, well, I've got an idea of your family tree. I'm just going to quickly write it down. Let's keep it basic. It doesn't need to be all complicated to start with. And as you develop expertise, you can, you know, look at other family members, because you're going to want to do that. But some people only want to explore one line anyway, to be quite honest. I mean, we have got the website, Leicestershire and Rutland Family History is easy to find. We've got the Facebook group. We're hoping to run a course soon about next steps in family history. You know, you've done the basics. What can you do next to add more information to your initial research? But we're always advertising what we're doing on either Facebook and the website. So if people are interested, have a look. And then if they'd like to come along and chat to some of us, we're there Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, Saturday. We're a friendly lot. And we just love getting people started on the first steps to their own research. You know, hopefully they'll get addicted as I've been for quite a long time.
Absolutely. I can totally vouch for that. My mum enjoys coming down. It's very social. She's made some good friends as well since my dad passed away. So she's been doing it from that sort of, if she doesn't write these things on the back of the photos, then no one's ever going to know. I think also what's quite interesting, just one final thing to finish off, is the fact that, you know, as an older person, when you're writing on the back of photos who these people are, and maybe you're not even printing them off from your phone if you're only using your phone, not just that bag of photos under your bed, is the fact that it's a great way of engaging nieces and nephews and grandchildren in conversation, and almost like not getting them interested in or hooked in family history, but just getting them to think about who they are, where they're from and what the family is. And it kind of, they go on that journey and make it a lifelong thing rather than just something you have to start in the future.
Definitely. And I think photos are often particularly interesting because they'll go, why is she wearing that? What's that? I had this photo of my great-grandfather in the fireman's uniform. Well, what sat in his hand? It was an axe. I presume he needed an axe to, you know, fight into these burning buildings. And I think children are very interested in sepia photos. You know, you can ask questions to engage them. So, yes, if you can engage younger children. And then, you know, as I said to you at that course, let's try and get it back to the next generation. Don't leave it until you've retired, because, you know, you might find you're losing out on information from other family members.
Wise words. Thanks very much, Sue.